Let's talk now to Russell Norman, former co-leader of the Green Party, and he's now Greenpeace NZ director. Good evening, Russell.
Good evening.
What does it mean, declaring a climate emergency? There's a bit of a confusion around this.
I think the first thing that it means is that you recognise the science around climate change, and you recognise that once you look at the science, that it's a pressing problem which requires urgent action. And if we don't take urgent action, then the consequences will be severe. So I think it's just saying that that's the reality we face. And the next question, obviously, is what do you do about it?
Well, in the motion itself, here's a sentence, for example, to move that New Zealand seizes the economic opportunities that a clean green reputation provides. Isn't that just all about the optics, that new word we're hearing?
Well, it's certainly true that part of it is about how things are presented and how they sound. And so one of the big arguments over many years around climate change have from those who oppose, who are basically climate science deniers, is they say, oh, it's too expensive and we can't do anything and so forth and so on. And so I'm sure that part of the language in that motion is motivated to counter that argument by saying, actually, in a world that's moving to low carbon technology and products and services, there's an economic opportunity to embrace that future while doing the right thing by climate change.
The government want their fleet of something like 16,000 cars electric by 2025. Is that achievable?
Yeah, I mean, so that's the electrification of the vehicle fleet does need to happen pretty rapidly, and it's certainly achievable. The issue is obviously that that's a relatively small part of the global of the New Zealand picture. But yeah, I mean, I think it's important that the government does electrify the vehicle fleet, and it can happen pretty quickly. The electric vehicle market's quite a mature market now.
And it's not that hard for a government department to follow orders and do what's required. And, of course, taxpayers pay for it. So there'll be some cynicism over that, I should imagine.
Well, I mean, if you look at if you're someone who uses vehicles a lot, and a lot of government departments are, their vehicles are quite well used, then actually it's quite makes a lot of sense economically to actually move to electric vehicles, because if you use the fleet a lot, it actually is cheaper. Because the thing about electric vehicles, they have very few moving parts, so they're very low maintenance, and of course their fuel costs are very cheap compared to petrol. And if you look at the New Zealand-wide picture, I mean, this is one of the great opportunities for New Zealand, is actually to use our own transport energy, so the electricity we generate in New Zealand from renewable sources, to replace transport energy that we're paying from abroad. So instead of spending $5 billion a year paying for oil from overseas, we can provide our own transport energy, and it's hugely beneficial for New Zealand's chronic current account deficit.
Your recent Greenpeace petition, which called for the government to do exactly what they did today, which was declare a climate emergency, it got over 23,500 signatures, and you are now expecting, quote, bold action from the government. Is it bold enough?
No, it's not bold enough at this stage. So the first 3 years of this government, it didn't really make a lot of progress on climate change. There was really only two significant policies in the first year. The first was the oil and gas exploration ban, which was very significant globally, but didn't have much of an impact in terms of New Zealand's emissions. And then the second policy is the cap on synthetic nitrogen fertilizer, which is by far the single most important climate policy, as well as freshwater policy, the first term. So what we need, given the relatively small achievements of the first 3 years, is the government to act in a big way in its second term. And that really is about dealing with agriculture and transport.
You're looking for a regenerative farming revolution. That's what Greenpeace is calling for. How likely is it for the government to really look at this in the way that you want them to?
Well, hard to put numbers on it, but I mean, what we saw in the first term is the government capitulated to agribusiness. They didn't put agriculture into the emissions trading scheme, for instance, even though it was their policy to do so, and they had the votes from New Zealand First and the Greens to do it. They chickened out on it. But they certainly, I think, recognise that the New Zealand agricultural system has very high emissions, is very vulnerable from a brand point of view, which is obviously one of the issues for our exports. And so making the transition from industrial to regenerative agriculture is, I think, one of the key priorities that's got to be for our country. And I think to some extent the government recognises that, and certainly the Ministry for Primary Industries are looking into regenerative agriculture, how to define it, how to help the move. But what we need are the policies to drive it. So that's not only the cap on synthetic nitrogen fertiliser, but a sinking lid to get us off this terrible pollutant for our waterways and for the climate, and to support financially the transition for the New Zealand food production system. I mean, it's half of our emissions. Agriculture globally is about a third of emissions. So it's a huge sector changing the way that we produce food.
And Russell, the ACT Party have come out and said that declaring a climate emergency is a stunt. What's your response to that?
Look, I think the ACT Party have been pretty consistent in its denial of climate science, and so they pretty much had the same position all the way through. So I think they would criticise anything the government did. That's obviously, it's a democracy, and they've got a right to put their head in the sand in a kind of Donald Trump-like manner. But when you look at the science, it's clear that we need to take action. The climate emergency is kind of a signal, but if it's followed by action, then that matters. And the trying to make the public sector go carbon neutral by 2025 is a small step in the right direction. But now we need the government to make really bold steps in terms of agriculture and transport, and I'm sure the ACT Party will oppose those as well.
What about National?
Probably. National are in a different position, so they've accepted the climate science but don't want to do anything about it, whereas not do that much about it. Labor have also accepted the climate science but are doing a bit more about it, which is great, though we didn't see a lot of action in the first term. So that's the political landscape. But I think that most New Zealanders get this now, that this is a major problem, and they expect the government to act on it. And so I do think there's a mandate for the government to take bold action to cut New Zealand's emissions. And you got to give it the context as well. The government produced its own report at the end of last year, which looked at New Zealand's emissions pathway going forward based on their own analysis and their own policy. And it showed that our gross emissions were only, by the government's own estimate, would only decline 7% by 2030. So that's obviously completely inadequate. And we need to cut them by 50% by 2030. So I think by their own projections, it shows they simply haven't introduced sufficient policy to cut emissions yet.
Russell, thanks for joining us tonight.
My pleasure.
That's Russell Norman, New Zealand Greenpeace Director, and joining me now is ACT Party Leader David Seymour. Good evening.
Hey, good evening.
Is your head in the sand, as Russell Norman suggests?
No. Look, a lot of anger and name-calling and epithets in the start of that answer that you just got from Russell Norman. And, you know, I think that's a shame, because if you really believe in your cause, it's better to reach out to people and try to persuade them rather than attack them with all that sort of nastiness. So it's a bit disappointing. But look, and I'll just say a couple of things that might explain, you know, some of the frustration that he appears to be feeling is that New Zealand does face some realities with climate. One is that if we don't have climate policy, the rest of the world will judge us. They'll judge us in trade policy and they'll judge us in consumer choices. So we have to have a policy that is doing our bit. But the second reality we face is that if we set goals that are in excess of what our partners around the world are prepared to do, then we can very easily shut down things like the Glenbrook steel mill, for instance, and end up consuming steel from offshore that is produced in countries that have no climate policy whatsoever. And those are some pretty harsh, hard and stark realities that ACT's always been very aware of. And I think that, you know, the Russell Normans of the world need to recognise that too and try to take people with them rather than getting into name calling and so on.
Well, what is achievable? What are the solutions then for tackling this issue?
Well, I just say a couple of points. One is, in the context of today's climate emergency, our view is that it takes the word emergency and uses it in such a broad way as almost to rob the word of any meaning whatsoever. If it's an emergency, then you know, usually there's a situation that requires a sudden change in action to deal with it. You know, nothing of the sort happened today. The government basically just told people what the policies they already have are. So I think, you know, it was a political stunt. There's something we could have done today that would have befitted, you know, the parliament taking action. And that is we could change our parliamentary calendar to spend 4 days per week in parliament rather than three, and consequently fly to Wellington, as most of us have to fly to get there. We could fly 25% less if we were to do more days per week and fewer weeks per year, better work-life balance, more intensive work when we're in Wellington and so on. So that's something I've been pushing for quite a while now. Other parties won't come on board. But, you know, if we're going to do something a little bit symbolic but a little bit tangible in Parliament, we could very easily lead by that example. At the moment, we're the only people I know of who have an unlimited travel account. We can fly as much as we like, and there's zero consequence for us in terms of our budget. So that's something that, you know, if you want to talk about the things Parliament could do today, we could have done, but I've chosen not to, and that's why I say it's a triumph of politics over actual policy improvement.
You use the word symbolic, but those travel policies that you're talking about for parliamentarians, they're all incremental, aren't they? Do you not think that this is a situation that does require a sudden change?
Well, if you can argue that it does, but if that's the case, then declaring an emergency, as the government did today, hasn't brought about that change, and that's why I've called it a stunt. The second thing I'd say is that, you know, while changing the flight patterns of Parliament would be largely symbolic, you know, 120 people by themselves, even if they fly a lot, are not going to make a huge impact on the global climate. You know, it is actually tangible, unlike declaring an emergency. But our broader climate policy of having a carbon price tied to our trading partners, that is something that I think would improve the policy that New Zealand has, because at present, under the Zero Carbon Act, the power that a climate minister has over particular sectors or industries is the kind of concentration of power that traditionally the Green Party have actually been opponents of, and ACT has always opposed concentrating economic power in one political office. You know, the setting carbon budgets for an industry means that the Minister of Climate Change really can decide if a particular industry lives or dies in New Zealand, and I don't think that's right.
Russell Norman says that Greenpeace want regenerative agriculture. What's your view on regenerative agriculture?
I think one of the kind of fault lines in politics today is between idealists and realists. So the idealists, you know, I think that the Greens often fit into that category. I think that Labor, particularly under Jacinda Ardern's leadership, fit that category. And, you know, I often agree with the goals and the ideals that they set out. But there's also a practical aspect to achieving your goals, and that's where the realism comes in. You know, my question is simply, what is regenerative agriculture, and how is that different from what farmers are already doing every day? You know, farmers are constantly trying to reduce the cost of what they consume, make sure that their land and their animals are in good condition, because that allows them to be more productive in the future, and they're constantly trying to maximise the value that they get out. I mean, they'd be crazy not to. And I think one thing I pick up from the farming community is that they're a little bit offended. There seems to be almost an assumption in some of this policymaking that maybe they're a little bit not all there. And actually, the problem that they have is that they need to be told what to do. So when someone says that, you know, they should have regenerative agriculture, I think the onus is on them to say, well, how is that different from what farmers are already trying to do to conserve as much as possible?
Well, they want to phase out synthetic nitrogen fertiliser, for one.
Yeah, OK, but do you think that any farmer is using synthetic nitrogen fertilizer, more than they can afford to, more than they would like to, given the costs and given the impact that it has on the environment around them and given the regulatory constraints that they already face. So when you say that, what you're really saying is that we're going to acknowledge the choices that you're currently making, given the costs and benefits and constraints that you have, and then give you a totally different decision, and presumably you're going to have to compensate that somehow. And I think if you said to that farmer, you know, why would you do it that way? Or they might ask you, why should I do it that way? And you say, oh, we've just decided without knowing much about it that you should come to a different conclusion. That's the idealist view. But realists would say, well, we're not entirely sure that that's actually going to make the world a better place. You're basically taking a person that has a lot of knowledge, that knows what they're doing, that lives it day to day, and replacing their judgment with someone else's.
And just finally, will you or do you drive an electric vehicle yourself?
Well, I'd love to. I actually can't afford to. A lot of people in that category. I think you get a Nissan Leaf for about $60,000. Tesla, you'd be lucky to get in at 80 or 90. Of course, sometimes you can get second-hand ones, but a pretty limited supply. And I'm a relatively high income person, but I can't afford to have a car that's half my income. A lot of people can't afford that. And of course, that's what it really means to have electric vehicles. I'm an electrical engineer. I've been around the Pukekohe racetrack in a Tesla. I'd really love to have one, but like most people, that's not actually realistic.
The Prime Minister has said today that all government departments will be required to replace their fleet with electric vehicles by 2025.
You may have heard she also said that there'll be a process if they can't. So I can guarantee you that there'll be a whole lot of government departments saying, OK, well, look, we can pay twice as much per vehicle, or we can fill out this form and explain that, due to COVID or whatever problem we have or whatever, we're not going to do it this year. So the net effect of her policy, and this is why I am so critical of any of these initiatives, the net effect of her policy is that people will spend a little bit more time filling out a form to explain why it is that they did not buy an electric vehicle. But like I say, I'm actually a trained electrical engineer, and I'm always hopeful that technological progress is going to allow us to have higher standards of living with a smaller environmental impact. That's certainly been the trend of the last few hundred years, and long may it continue. But it's usually fairly futile for governments to try and speed it up.
David Seymour, thank you very much.
No problem, Karen. Fun to talk to you.